Download your free KCBQ smartphone app. Search KCBQ. Intelligent Talk, 1170 KCBQ.
The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in his Washington Times Communities column, Forbidden Siegel Talk.
It's time now for The Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you look at the news this last week. Who couldn't be watching the news this last week? And you wonder, where could God possibly be? The entire planet seems to be melting down before our eyes, right before our eyes. The economy is crumbling like a soggy gingerbread man. American diplomats and soldiers are being murdered in cold blood. American embassies are being attacked from Egypt to Libya to the Sudan to Tunisia to Lebanon, only to name a few. I saw a map with some 20 of them, and that was a few hours ago. It could have changed since then. The world's burning, literal fire burning. Our politicians seem to offer nothing except politics. Where is the hope? Where is the rescue? It's enough to make even an atheist yearn for God, but then where is God? How can a loving God and an all-powerful God capable of doing anything allow suffering and evil? This question has been explored before on my program. We're going to explore it again today. Certainly something we need to do once in a while. I remember it was explored years ago by a man named James McLeish. He wrote a play called J.B., kind of a modern telling of the Book of Job. And I'll never forget one of the lines. He was trying to make the point that if God can do anything, then he's not a very good God if he doesn't interfere at times. Or on the other hand, maybe God is very good, but he just doesn't have the power to do it. And I'll never forget his line. It went like this. If God is God, he is not good. If God is good, he is not God. Now, I can understand why somebody would feel that way. However, the Bible portrays God as being all-powerful. And also being good. We'll take an honest, heartfelt look at the question of God as he relates to suffering later on in today's program, because there's certainly a lot of suffering going on in the world. But of course, I'm also going to spend a lot of time today commenting on the riveting, constantly changing roller coaster drama of burning buildings, anti-American chants, discussions of censorship, which give me the creeps more than anything, and downright lies by the men and women who were elected to lead us and protect us. But first, we need to take a little detour. I need to leapfrog backwards over last week's news and look at what was big in the news 2 weeks ago. We did a very special two-part program these last couple of weeks. I did it with Dana Wright, and it was about President Obama. But there were a lot of things going on in the current news that would have muddied the show. So some of the stuff that went on in the conventions I had not actually talked about on this program. I wrote about them in my online column, Forbidden Table Talk. But today I do feel the need to go back 2 weeks. Now, why would I do that? There's a very good reason, so be patient. I know, I sound like the airline captain on a plane. The plane stalled in the runway. We appreciate your patience. They say that because they know nobody's feeling patient. They want that bird to get off the ground. But this time, with your old pal Bob, some patience is warranted. I promise I will get to our most current news, because I know that's what most of you are expecting to hear me talk about today, but you have to indulge me. We must first lay a foundation by discussing the dishonest things that happened at the DNC convention, because that included a lot of lying about Israel specifically, and coincidentally, Israel's almost the centerpiece, or people are claiming it's the centerpiece of what's going on right now. And so what happened at the DNC convention speaks volumes about why the DNC mess from 2 weeks ago may have created our current mess. A lot of that mess would have happened anyway, but I believe it was made much worse by the Obama administration. Let me put it this way. Obama's attempts to pour water in the fire, the water that he thought he had in his hand was really lighter fluid, maybe gasoline. So let's review. Under verbal attack from Mitt Romney and other Republicans regarding some glaring changes in their 2012 platform, the Democratic National Committee, National Convention actually, attempted to quickly clean things up. Unfortunately, this failed catharsis created a much bigger mess, exposing a definite lie from Democratic National Committee Chairwoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz and raising suspicion about the possibility of greater cover-ups from the Obama administration itself. At the heart of this controversy is a comparison between the DNC 2008 and 2012 platforms. Differences show an omission of the word God, along with a statement about Jerusalem being the capital city of Israel. Additional deletions were not getting as much press, even though they were every bit as controversial. A statement about the terrorist organization Hamas, and some further comments about America's relationship to Israel. Now, I have the two platforms in front of me here. Regarding God, the 2008 DNC platform said, "We need a government that stands up for the hopes, values, and interests of working people and gives everyone willing to work hard the chance to make the most of their God-given potential." So they just kind of threw it in. I mean, it wasn't about God, but they talked about God-given potential. Now, the 2012 revision reads, "We gather to reclaim the basic bargain that built the largest middle class and the most prosperous nation on earth, the simple principle that in America, hard work should pay off, responsibility should be rewarded, and each one of us should be able to go as far as our talent and drive take us." Well, that's beautiful. That brings a tear to my eye. They left the word God out that time. Probably they were hoping nobody would notice. The 2008 platform also said the following about Israel and her enemies. "The United States and its quartet partners should continue to isolate Hamas until it renounces terrorism, recognizes Israel's right to exist, and abides by past agreements. The creation of a Palestinian state through final status negotiations together with an international compensation mechanism should resolve the issue of Palestinian refugees by allowing them to settle there rather than in Israel. All understand that it is unrealistic to expect the outcome of final status negotiations to be a full and complete return to the armistice lines of 1949. Jerusalem is and will remain the capital of Israel. The parties have agreed that Jerusalem is a matter for final status negotiations. It should remain an undivided city accessible to people of all faiths." Okay, very kind to Israel, but that was the 2008 platform. Here's what the 2012 revision reads, or I should say, this is what the 2012 one was going to read before they got into such a bed of trouble. "President Obama and the Democratic Party maintain an unshakable commitment to Israel's security." Now, it's interesting they use the word President Obama there, because you need to remember that, because later on, President Obama is going to claim he didn't know what was in here. So you're going to have to believe that they actually spoke in his name without checking with them. Not bloody likely, but I'll continue. "President Obama and the Democratic Party maintain an unshakable commitment to Israel's security. A strong and secure Israel is vital to the United States, not simply because we share strategic interests, but also because we share common values." Now, that sounds good so far, but the question is, what happened to the Jerusalem thing? Then they go on, "For this reason, despite budgetary constraints, the president has worked with Congress to increase security assistance to Israel every single year since taking office, providing nearly $10 billion in the past 3 years. The administration has also worked to ensure Israel's qualitative military edge in the region, and we have deepened defense cooperation." Sounds like they're explaining all the things they did do because they want us to accept what they also did, pulling Jerusalem out of there. "And we have deepened defense cooperation, including funding the Iron Dome system to help Israel address its most pressing threats, including the growing danger posed by rockets and missiles emanating from the Gaza Strip, Lebanon, Syria, and Iran. The president's consistent support for Israel's right to defend itself and his steadfast opposition to any attempt to delegitimize Israel on the world stage are further evidence of our enduring commitment to Israel's security." Okay, but they took a lot of things out of there. They took out the part that Hamas has to recognize Israel's right to exist. They took out the part about Jerusalem being her capital. And then they got some bad press over it from some Republicans, from some conservative talk show hosts. So they acted like, "Ooh, who's B, jumping Jiminy. We didn't know we deleted all that," in a hasty attempt to paste back the Jerusalem and God references Democratic National Convention Chairman Antonio Villaraigosa, I hope I pronounced his name right, called a special meeting of the Democratic delegates in Charlotte, North Carolina. The entire exchange was witnessed by anyone watching on live TV. Let's listen in.
First from Fox this Wednesday night, an absolutely stunning moment here at the DNC. Democrats have in the last hour or so made a couple of changes to their party platform, and it didn't go smoothly. Critics have been going after the Democrats for failing to refer to Jerusalem as the capital of Israel and for not mentioning God anywhere in the platform. Well, less than 2 hours ago, they attempted to change the platform to address the criticism, and watch what happened.
Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, the matter requires a two-thirds vote in the affirmative. All those delegates in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those delegates opposed say no.
No.
In the opinion of the... Let me do that again. All of those delegates in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those delegates opposed say no. I guess.
You've got a rule, and then you've got to let them do what they're going to do. Rule.
I'll do that one more time. All those delegates in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those delegates opposed say no.
No.
In the opinion of the chair, two-thirds have voted in the affirmative. The motion is adopted. And the platform has been amended as shown on the screen.
Whoa. Now, you're hearing it on audio. I know a lot of you saw it on TV, but if you didn't see it on TV, you could go to YouTube and download the look of surprise on the poor mayor's face when he heard the three repeated votes was a sight to behold. But not as interesting as a picture of the teleprompter stating ahead of time that a two-thirds majority had been heard. Evidently, this two-thirds majority was a foregone conclusion before the meeting even convened. And you heard the loud boos from the audience after the mayor's decision. Such a scene could not have been invented for a movie. It would have looked too far-fetched, even for a story. As the old saying goes, truth is often stranger than fiction. Unfortunately for the Democratic Party, things got even stranger. This was only the beginning. Enter from stage left, DNC chairwoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Left being the operative word. Debbie can always be counted on to add spicy twists and turns. And I'm going to read some quotes from Debbie, but then we actually have one that we're going to play for you, and you'll understand why we need to play it for you, but I'm going to read some first. In an interview with CNN about why the deletions were made in the first place, she said, and my voice doesn't sound anything like hers, but I'll just read. Well, really, it was essentially a technical oversight, and President Obama, because he personally believes that Jerusalem is and always should remain the capital of Israel, he made sure that we amended the platform to reflect his personal view, as well as reflect the language that we had in the platform of 2008. Okay, then, when asked if the vote on the floor truly portrayed the wishes of the delegates, Debbie Dearest went on to say, it was absolutely a two-thirds vote. Yeah, I believe you, Debbie. To believe these statements, one must literally suspend belief and create a scenario where dynamite-loaded subjects such as Jerusalem, Hamas, and even God himself were omitted by accident without anybody noticing. We also have to pretend that we didn't really see and hear the amendment session for ourselves on TV. And finally, we're forced to imagine that President Obama contributed nothing to his party's platform this year, or at the very least, nobody informed him about the platform? Well, never mind. If the DNC chairwoman has spoken officially, that ends the matter. After all, who has more credibility than Debbie Wasserman Schultz? As a matter of fact, Debbie's truthful analysis of Israel and American politics had already come up in a separate venue, at this very same convention. During a training session for Jewish Democrats, the Florida Congresswoman, herself Jewish, explained that Republicans, quote, can't get anywhere with our community on domestic issues and therefore do everything they can to lie and distort and mischaracterize this president's stellar record on Israel. Yeah, Debbie, Obama has had a stellar record on Israel. But then came the real zinger. Debbie said, "We know, and I've heard no less than Ambassador Michael Oren say this, that what the Republicans are doing is dangerous for Israel." Well, this was quite a powerful statement from the enthusiastic DNC chairwoman. Only one problem. Ambassador Oren denied making any such statement. He categorically denied. Have you ever noticed that when people deny things, I categorically deny it? But he did. He says, here's it. "I categorically deny that I ever characterized Republican policies as harmful to Israel. Bipartisan support is a paramount national interest for Israel, and we have great friends on both sides of the aisle." Well, Debbie wiggled away from her dilemma with a denial of her own by insisting Klein and the Washington Examiner misquoted her, and these we will play for you on audio.
The Israeli ambassador to the United States today called out the chairwoman of the Democratic National Committee and categorically denied that he ever said Republican policies were bad for Israel. The back and forth began yesterday when the chairwoman, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the congresswoman from Florida, criticized the Republican attacks on the president over Israel. She told a group of people at the DNC, quote, "We know, and I've heard no less than Ambassador Michael Oren say this, that what the Republicans are doing is dangerous for Israel." Earlier today, Ambassador Oren issued a statement denying that he'd ever called Republican policies harmful for Israel. "We're going to kill this last break." And that his nation has friends in both the United States political parties. As I mentioned, Debbie Wasserman Schultz is with us. He says he didn't say that.
And I didn't say he said that. And unfortunately, that comment was reported by a conservative newspaper. It's not surprising that they would deliberately...
By telling you this and sharing this with you. "We know, and I've heard no less than Ambassador Michael Oren say this, that what the Republicans are doing is dangerous for Israel. They're undermining Israel's security by suggesting that the United States and Israel don't have anything other than a unique and close and special relationship."
Okay, now, it sounded a little bit garbled there. But what was going on, what Fox News was doing, is they were recording Debbie Wasserman Schultz saying, "Well, okay, the ambassador denied that I said that, but I never even said that about him. I never made that claim. The newspaper that interviewed me, you know, they're so conservative, they just made that up." Well, Klein, the reporter that interviewed her for the Washington Examiner, had recorded her. So what they just did there on Fox News is they played Debbie denying that she said it, and then they actually played it. And call me a romantic, but when they played it, it sounded remarkably similar to Klein's original text. In fact, it was the same word for word. Well, caught with jam on her face, Debbie still denies putting her hand in the jar. Add this to her two-thirds misstatement, and we have reason to doubt everything else, including her promise about Obama's desires for Israel. What are Obama's desires for Israel? We'll discuss them when we return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Call Bob now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
The sound even more beautiful.
Yeah.
Welcome back to our program. Now, I am going to talk about what's been going on in the Middle East and all over a lot of the world, but first, we have been laying a foundation because it's very connected. We're discussing the dishonest things that happened at the DNC convention the week before because it included a lot of lying about Israel specifically. And again, that speaks volumes about why the DNC mess from 2 weeks ago contributed. Some of this would have happened anyway, but it certainly contributed and made worse our current mess. Now, again, the spin is that Obama was caught completely by surprise and had no idea that the statement about Jerusalem being Israel's capital city had been taken out. Oh, yeah? Well, try this one on for size. Politico offers a much different interpretation of Obama's involvement with his party platform, namely that he had been aware of the deletions all along. And I'm reading now from Politico. While the campaign at first said Obama had seen the language prior to the convention, it later said he did not learn of the issue until Wednesday morning when he became aware of seeing news coverage of the issue. Once that happened, the president directed his staff to change the language to include a reference to God in Jerusalem as Israel's capital because the campaign source said the amended version is, quote unquote, consistent with the president's own positions. Now, all right, some might question Politico's accuracy. They're not a conservative outlet. They're not against Obama, so they had no reason to make this up. But okay, so you could question their accuracy because it's an exclusive source. But other news from other outlets force us to at least consider the possibility that Politico is dead on accurate. At first, the Weekly Standard got an explanation similar to Schultz from an Obama campaign advisor. And that person said the president did want to make clear what his personal beliefs were because they were not in the original platform. But when the Weekly Standard asked this same official to comment on White House spokesman Jay Carney's refusal to commit to the Jerusalem capital way back in July, the spokesman said, well, the president has a personal view, but the president and the administration's view as a matter of a policy is ultimately that Jerusalem is a final status issue. It doesn't make sense for a U.S. president to impose his personal beliefs in a policy context, but it's important for him to make clear where he stands on these issues. All right, it's difficult to translate such political gibberish and double talk, but let me take a wild stab at it. Obama does not want Jerusalem to be the capital, but Obama's policy does want Jerusalem to be the capital. He's on the side of the Palestinians, but his official Democratic Party wants them to be the capital, and that's why it looked confusing. All right, well, gee, that's funny, because Chairwoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz already told us that Jerusalem as Israel's capital was Obama's personal view. She even used the word personal. For that matter, that same White House campaign official initially said the same thing and adjusted personal to policy only after being pressed. Of course, Obama's feelings about Jerusalem have surfaced on and off, not only through his campaign advisors and press secretary, but the State Department itself. And I will talk about what the State Department said back in March when we return to the Bob Siegel Show. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated, license number 480539, W&S Electric. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. What does the Obama administration really think about Israel? Were they really just delighted that Jerusalem was no longer going to be the capital until they saw that it was important to other people, so they tried to make it look like they knew nothing about it being put out? Well, we just got to look at the track record of the administration itself. Now, in March, when asked to comment on whether Jerusalem should be the capital of Israel, State Department official, American State Department official Victoria Nuland said, and I quote, "Our policy with regard to Jerusalem is that it has to be solved through negotiations." Okay, now that may sound a little evasive, but in all fairness, she did add more. She added, "That's all I have to say on this issue." Actually, in September of 2011, she finally had more to say. This same Victoria Nuland referred to the building of Jewish apartments in East Jerusalem as counterproductive. She was also deeply disappointed, quote unquote, deeply disappointed by Israel's decision on new settlement construction. And then she went on to say this: "We consider this counterproductive in our efforts to resume direct negotiations between the parties, and we have long urged both parties to avoid actions which could undermine trust, including in Jerusalem, and we'll continue to work with parties to try to resume direct negotiations." All right, question. That's what I like to do. I like to make the obvious obvious. If Jerusalem is really recognized by Obama, or Obama's official policy, for those of you who like to parse words, if it's really recognized by Obama as Israel's capital, then why be concerned when Israel builds apartments in her own capital? Why act as if she's doing that in occupied territory unless they see it as occupied territory? One should also keep in mind that Obama hasn't visited Israel once during his 4 years as president, even though he's gone to other Middle East countries. And what about the whole Hamas omission, which also relates to Israel? Obama didn't even try to put that one back in. Why not? Could it be that our president only felt compelled to reverse the omissions which got the worst press? Maybe the Hamas deletion shouldn't be too big of a surprise, considering the amount of financial aid America continues to award those cutthroats via Palestinians who elected Hamas as one of their ruling parties along with the Fatah. In fact, Palestinian Media Watch recently reported the intentions of a stronger connection between the two parties. Media Watch, April 10th, 2012, a Palestinian Authority minister stated last month that Fatah and Hamas must unite in order to achieve the destruction of Israel. So we are giving money to people who claim that they're going to use the money to destroy Israel. Now, the Bush administration, they also gave financial aid to the Palestinians. But it is reasonable to ask why Obama has no concern about a new Democratic platform that removes mention of Israel's sworn enemy, an enemy who promises her complete annihilation. Meanwhile, let us not allow the whole song and dance about changed amendments to get our minds off the original platform topics in their own rights, since they say every bit as much about truth and falsehood. It's not yet clear why God was deleted, but it is painfully apparent that Jerusalem got the white out because many Democratic delegates, and very likely Obama himself, simply do not accept Jerusalem as Israel's capital. Such a position, my friends, is not supported by facts or by honest friendship with Israel. Jerusalem has been the capital city of Israel since the time of King David, 1,000 years before Christ. Those who say otherwise are either colossally ignorant or guilty of a sinister desire to rewrite history. Jerusalem's conquerors have since come and gone, but occupations from Babylonians, Romans, Muslims, Byzantines, and Roman Catholics, to name only some, do not establish any moral disqualification of Jewish ownership. Neither is the city disputable simply because Arabs in the Holy Land changed their name to Palestinians in the 1960s and then allowed some in their number to rewrite history by insisting Palestinians are the true indigenous people and the Jews have no ancient claim to the land. Actually, Arabs did not come on the Jerusalem scene until 637 AD as a result of Muslim expansion. Jews and Arabs after that continued living there all the way up to the 20th century when the United Nations offered a two-state solution, one Jewish, one Arab, that would share Jerusalem as the capital city. The Jews agreed to this partition. The Arabs did not. After several wars with surrounding Arab nations dedicated to liquidating Israel, the Israelis eventually took over all of Jerusalem in 1967. Inasmuch as the PLO charter does not even recognize Israel's right to exist, Israel has zero reason to discuss any new partitioning of her capital. It can be argued that to not recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel is to not recognize Israel, period. Israel views her legitimacy through the lens of her own accurate history. If there are lessons to be learned from the 2012 platform debacle, one of them is that Obama should talk straight and speak his honest feelings about Israel so that our electorate, including a strong Jewish Democratic voting bloc, can make an informed decision in November. Don't hold your breath. Still, it's not too hard to add up the pieces and make an educated guess. So how do we untangle all this? Which was worse? Removing Jerusalem and other important features from the platform in the first place? Lying about who initially wanted them removed? Trying to put some of that back in a railroaded, undemocratic fashion? Compounding the lie with claims that the two-thirds majority was legitimate? Unfortunately for Obama, Schultz, and their associates, the correct answer seems to be E, all of the above. Well, now we'll move on to this week's news. As I speak today, as I speak this very moment, there are riots and protests all over the world, not just the Middle East, but most of them in the Middle East. Muslims rioting against America. None of this, supposedly, is the fault of Islam. It may be a lot of Muslims rioting, but it has nothing to do with Islam. Islam is a religion of peace. Oh, we may have a few nutcases, but mostly it's a religion of peace. How do we know it's a religion of peace? Because Muslims keep telling us it's a religion of peace. That's all. Supposedly, all these riots and burnings of buildings and murders all over the world were inspired by a 14-minute trailer for a film that very few people have even seen anyway. The film is about the Prophet Muhammad. He's portrayed by an actor and not portrayed in a positive light. Muslims don't like seeing him portrayed at all. No image of the Prophet is ever to be created, according to Muslims, a lesson they taught the world a few years ago with another series of riots, this time for Danish cartoons that showed Muhammad. From cartoons to Khartoum, the shout is the same. Do not dare blaspheme our Prophet. The film is called Innocence of Muslims. The trailer can be found on the internet. The actors involved with all this hoopla, they claim they were deceived. I've got to say, there's a lot of information coming out, and I'm telling you what we've got so far, and it's a story that could easily adjust itself, so I'm doing the best I can with it. But it's from what we're hearing so far, the actors claim they were deceived. They say they didn't even know the film was about Muhammad, that when you hear his name in the film, it was dubbed. The story gets even better. The director and writer, Sam Basili, has gone into hiding. Well, gee, you think. He claims to be an American, but an Israeli Jew by nationality. But then Israeli authorities say they can find no record of the man. This may be somebody setting up the Jews. A lot of these Muslim rioters hate Jews anyway. It doesn't take much to invent a story and let them believe it. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. To build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. Well, I told you the news keeps changing. I'm hearing that possibly the director of the film that was in hiding, maybe out of hiding, may have been captured. We probably won't get on top of all the accuracy of that right now on this show, but don't turn off my show. But when my show's over, turn on the news and hear the latest update. The important thing is this. I watched this 14-minute trailer. I don't mean that it's important that I watched it. I mean that the trailer is the issue. Whether the director's in hiding or not in hiding. I watched it. Okay, now we review a lot of movies, and this wasn't the whole movie. It's a two-hour movie. I did look at the 14-minute trailer that showed lots of vignettes. It looked like a stupid attempt at humor. I don't mind humor, but this was stupid humor. It was also disgusting. But let's be clear, and I could not say this more clearly. Had they portrayed Muhammad as the most brilliant, compassionate, spiritual man who ever lived, we still would have had these riots, partly because Muslims don't want any image of Muhammad, good or bad, partly because a lot of these people are just going to hate America and Israel no matter what we do, partly because, and this is the part you really don't like, partly because the Quran itself gives commands to wage war against the infidel. This morning on Fox and Friends, they interviewed a moderate Muslim. Now, there are moderate Muslims, but a lot of these moderate Muslims that come on TV, if you listen to them talk long enough, they ain't all that moderate. He came on and he denounced the violence, of course. In fact, I think he even denounced it categorically. When you denounce it categorically, it's even better. However, he also denounced the video. That's fine. If he doesn't like the video, he could denounce it, but he said free speech has limits. No, sir. Free speech does not have limits. The minute you put a limit on it, it's no longer called free. It may have limits according to your Sharia law, but not according to our First Amendment in the country America that you claim you're living on, Mr. Moderate Muslim. The film was terrible. I'll give you that. This was a terrible, or at least, you know, if this 14 minutes you can see on the internet, if that's any indication of the film, it's terrible. And okay, I will use my freedom of speech to call it terrible. There, I said it. It's terrible. But make no mistake, I will also use my freedom of speech to say that I'm tired of being told by a religion that I'm never allowed to criticize them. It's not as if Muslims don't criticize Christians and Jews. It's not as if their own sacred scriptures don't criticize Christians and Jews. And their prophet, Muhammad, well, certainly not the buffoon of this stupid movie, was not a man of peace either. He waged war. He commanded the jihad, or at least claimed that Allah spoke to him and commanded the jihad. How do you think he conquered Mecca? By holding a quilting bee? The movie still could have offered a more respectful portrayal, but look, if they wanted to claim Muhammad was the half-brother of Peter Pan and married to Tinkerbell in America, we have freedom of speech. But then the film was only an excuse anyway. I mean, who are we kidding? What's really going on here are carefully coordinated attacks that began on the anniversary of 9/11. This film was just a gift to them. Now, why were they doing that? Because they were led to believe they could get away with it. They were led to believe they could get away with it. Now, again, don't get me wrong. We've had violence from Muslims for years. We'll have violence from Muslims on any president's watch. I'm not going to claim that the violence under the Muslims is Obama's responsibility entirely. But the kissing up to the Muslims and the apologies are making things much, much worse. I believe that what started with a couple of embassies in a couple of countries would not have spread to some 20 nations by now if the administration hadn't continued to apologize. But the Obama administration spins it a much different way. Supposedly, listening to them, none of this was inspired by Obama's strategy of denying that we are at war against militant Islam, which he's denied for years. He's called it a contingency operation. He hasn't even wanted to use the word terror, let alone the word Islam. his kiss-up policies in a region of the world which interprets diplomacy as a sign of weakness cannot possibly have contributed to the problem, according to the Obama administration. Now, I know, you don't have to remind me, he got Osama bin Laden. Oh, yeah, I know, he got Osama bin Laden. We're going to hear that every other word from his surrogate talking point pundits for the next 2 months. He got Osama bin Laden. Of course, he got him by using the security apparatus left behind by George Bush, including information from those waterboarded, something Obama promised he would discontinue while speaking in Egypt, interestingly enough, back in 2009. That was on his Magical Mystery Apology Tour. Well, he talked about how much America has to learn, how bad we've been to the Muslims. You can't have it both ways, Mr. President. If you inherited the financial mess from George Bush, you also inherited the military, CIA, and Navy SEAL combination you got from George Bush, and the interrogation and information about where this man was hiding from those who waterboarded, and you got that from George Bush. Oh, sure, the Muslim nations may have hated Bush, but they respected Bush. And they may like you, Mr. President, but they do not respect you. Why are they killing our diplomats and burning our flags and storming our embassies? Because of a stupid film? No. At least part of it is because of you. Oh, they hate the film. Sure, they hate the film. But they think they can get away with the specific violence against Americans because of you. And the more you apologize for the film, the more they make demands. Your administration spends more time condemning the film than condemning the violence. Now, I know you've condemned the violence too, but I'm hearing a lot more about the film. While apologizing to those who storm our embassies, why don't you also send them a dozen red roses, a box of See's candy, and a free Slurpee from 7-Eleven? What better way to honor those who desecrate us on 9-11? You are taking no responsibility, Mr. President. You are being a battered wife enabler. But supposedly, if we listen to you, everything that happens under your watch is the fault of someone else. It's the fault of a movie. It's the fault of Republicans. The fault of George Bush, both for the state of the world and the state of the economy. The amazing Obama, he transforms the boundaries of time and space. He runs against George Bush in the year 2012, just as he ran against George Bush in the year 2008. And Bush wasn't even running for president in either of those years. However, does he pull it off? He's amazing, that Obama. His rival Mitt Romney? Not so amazing, that Romney. Not so amazing. Recovering right now from being attacked by that pack of wolves called the mainstream media. The mainstream media ganged up on Romney and made it clear in no uncertain terms that he has no right to openly criticize a sitting president's foreign policy, a position they didn't seem to have very well fleshed out back in 2008 when then-candidate Obama offered generous comments about George Bush, Afghanistan, and Iraq based upon his foreign experience that he had as a community organizer. Now, was Romney being political for saying that the American embassy in Egypt should not have apologized for that movie? That's the big question this week. Pundits debate this question for hours on end. Well, be of good cheer. Your old pal Bob is going to answer the question for you. Was Romney being political? Of course he was being political. He's a politician. That's what politicians do. They get political. Mr. Romney has an election in less than 2 months. All hell is broken out in the Middle East. Are we as voters not supposed to hear about how he would handle things if he was president? Of course he's being political.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's weekly column for Washington Times Communities. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net, SIEGEL, BobSiegel.net. Here, you can download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.BobSiegel.net.
Well, I know I sound very passionate today, and you're probably hearing in places a lot of anger, but I want to explain. There's actually a reason why it sounds that way. I'm angry. You should be too. I hope I am presenting a sense of outrage. Is Romney being political by commenting and saying what he'd do if he were president? Well, in as much as he might be president in 2 months, he should. But what about the guy we already have as president? He doesn't seem to have forgotten about the election. Yet in this case, since he already has the job of president, I must tell you, Obama is more needed right now as commander-in-chief than campaigner-in-chief. And yet he went to Vegas for a fundraiser the same day we found out that 4 people were killed at our embassy in Libya and mobs were still gathering outside our embassy in Egypt. We've been paying some $2 billion a year in aid to Egypt since the new Egyptian government took over. Wow, that was money well spent. About as useful as the hush money Jim Baker sent to Jessica Hahn for 9 years. Oh, sure. Finally, Egypt's president gave an appeal for calm. Took a few days, but finally he did it. That's a relief. Sleep well now. I mean, the guy's a member of the Muslim Brotherhood, which states as its objective the destruction of Israel and the conquering of the world for Islam. But he calls for calm. And after 2 days of refusing to even apologize, he does finally send the Egyptian military to guard the American embassy. Evidently, Obama finally said something which got through to this Egyptian President Morsi. Luckily, this was done in closed quarters by phone. His mic was not on this time, so who knows what really took place in that conversation. Back in March, while holding a press conference with good old Dmitry, the outgoing Russian president, Obama, not realizing that the mic was still on, said, "This is my last election. After my election, I have more flexibility." And then Dmitry whispered back, "I understand. I will transmit this information to Vladimir," referring to incoming President Vladimir Putin. Meanwhile, in some places, Muslim protesters, are now demanding that every member of the cast and crew of the movie be put to death. Well, Obama's not going to be pushed around by them. Thank goodness he didn't respond. Instead, he went to YouTube and asked them to review the film. Now, just what did President Obama mean by asking YouTube to review the film? I'll give you a hint. He didn't mean an artistic review. He didn't mean he wanted them to become Roger Ebert. He wants the power to start censoring the internet. Oh, wait, I almost forgot. He already has the power. He already has it. Back in July, Obama signed an executive order giving him control over the internet in case of an emergency. How did so many people miss that one? Probably because we were distracted by all of Obama's other executive orders. Eliminating our First Amendment free speech doesn't concern him. A stupid movie offending the Muslim Brotherhood, that concerns him. Let's not offend the Muslim Brotherhood. Obama, of course, is surprised by their actions. He thought they were a bunch of nice guys. He never saw this coming. He was enamored by the fact that they overthrew the former Egyptian dictator. And he wasn't a good guy, but Obama approved of this Arab Spring. Sure, there were some riots, but you're going to have riots against former Egyptian President Mubarak when he acts like a dictator, so we need a few riots when a tyrant is overthrown. But we went out of the frying pan into the fire. Of course, after the riots were over, the happy mob was celebrating their new independence, and they got so excited, they went a little overboard. They raped CBS newswoman Laura Logan. They raped her repeatedly. Oh, wait. There was an explanation. Of course, when something like this happens, it was a mistake. There is an explanation. You see, they thought she was Jewish. They were shouting Jew while they did it. She wasn't Jewish. They thought she was Jewish. That's why they raped her. Had they only known she wasn't Jewish, they probably wouldn't have done it. Oh, that explains it. I'm sure Miss Logan feels better now. They didn't realize they were raping an actual human being. They just thought they were raping a Jew. And Obama still, after that incident, said this Arab Spring, this revolution for the sake of democracy, was a good thing. Folks, just because democracy is put in order, it doesn't mean evil is gone. The Palestinians elected Hamas through a democracy. The Muslim Brotherhood now controls the Egyptian government through democracy. They believe that Islam should conquer the world. They call for the annihilation of Israel. Well, no news there. So does Hamas. So did the Palestinian Charter before it even elected Hamas. Hitler was elected as Chancellor of Germany. Democracy does not necessarily mean freedom. Sometimes it means little more than the fact that some snake-like dictators came into power through freedom, a freedom that immediately evaporates like an ice cube on a warm, sunny day after they come into power. But Obama still extends the olive branch to them, yet he won't let Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu meet with them. He says, I'm going to be in New York. Can I meet with you? Obama says he's too busy. Well, he has a busy calendar these days. He was on a radio show called Pimp with a Limp. He's scheduled to be on the Letterman show. He's campaigning. He doesn't have time to meet with the Israeli prime minister. But he has time to kiss the behinds of all the countries in the Middle East that hate us and then snub the one country that's our ally. Great. You see how it connects? You see how the DNC convention was just showing a hint? It was the tip of a much bigger iceberg. And now who knows what'll happen? The news may be so different next week. Who knows what I'll talk about? Who knows if Obama will be in control of the radio? It probably won't happen by next week. Probably be 2 or 3 weeks. But it's happening. It's happening one of these days. Well, I told you at the top of the show that all this madness was going to make us talk about suffering in general. I knew I wasn't going to get to it until later. I was hoping I'd get to it little sooner than I did, but it's very important news. I know it wasn't fun to review all of that, but I felt that, I'm doing a talk show. How can I not? How can I not give commentary about that? What did Jesus once say? If they didn't speak, the rocks themselves would cry out. Somebody has to cry out. But I am going to start this. I promise we'll continue it next week. And that's the question of how a loving God could allow suffering. And sometimes it happens because we go through personal trials. I went through a personal trial when my dad discovered, and here's where, I defended my Jewish brethren a lot today, but I'm not always defending my Jewish brethren because I'm a Jewish Christian. The Jews that listen to this radio show love what I say about Israel. They probably hate what I say about Jesus, but just to show you, I'm kind of an objective guy. I became a Christian during my second year of college. When my dad found out about it, he kicked me out of the house, and I suddenly didn't know where to go. I remember walking out to my backyard, looking up at the stars. I said, God, where do I go? What do I do? And I didn't understand why this was happening to me, but there's a passage of scripture, and I had not read the whole Bible yet. If I had been aware of this scripture, it would have helped. I wouldn't have felt the pain any less, but it would have helped. There would have been some comfort overlapped with the pain. It's found in 1 Peter 4:12 through 13. And it basically says that what I'm going through, all Christians will go through, not necessarily my story, but we all go through some kind of trial. To some degree, that's true. It's just as human beings, you live in this world, there's going to be suffering. But as Christians, we sometimes think that if we give our life to Jesus Christ, we won't go through trials. But look at this passage, 1 Peter 4:12 through 14. Dear friends, do not be surprised at the painful trial you are suffering, as though something strange were happening to you, but rejoice that you participate in the sufferings of Christ so that you may be overjoyed when his glory is revealed. Why is there suffering in the world? Well, the Bible does tell us why there is suffering in general. The Bible does not tell us why it is proportioned the way it is. The Bible doesn't tell us why a little six-year-old girl dies of leukemia, but a mobster lives to be 90. The Bible doesn't tell us why one guy's in a wheelchair and another guy can walk. But the Bible does tell us why we as a species are dealing with suffering and evil, and we will talk about that next week on The Bob Siegel Show. You are always welcome. Your questions are welcome, too.
The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
Intelligent talk.